1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay. Okay, it's a test. 1, 2, 1, 2. Check, check. 1, 2. And the levels had looked good out there, so they're probably okay out here. 1, 2, 1, 2. 1, 2, 1, 2. Check, check. 1, 2.
So why don't we get started? Hello. Ready to go. So, I don't think we have any guests today. No surprise guests. Just us among ourselves at long last. Talk about an issue that gets a lot of attention in sort of national cyber circles, and it'll be saved for last, kind of a way to see if we can synthesize all the different stuff doing over the term. And I thought it actually might be useful to start with a rotisserie question for the week. And we've highlighted a couple of answers that might be provocative from the answers that came in. Tip among those that did not play skip chips. I guess it's like use them or lose them. Somebody figured I might as well use them now that the term is coming to an end. It's unclear if you play two skip chips on this week's question, if you can really not answer it rather than just not answer it. But some people apparently try in a way to get rid of these skip chips, which are something like that, more value. So anyway, here's the question. Your national legislator received a deluge of letters demanding increased protection for children from online pornography. A few third graders were caught browsing pornography on a school computer. A ninth grader was found looking at pictures on the Playboy website at the library. And most of the fifth grade class was caught with a copy of a racy story from a sexually related news group. One of the boys in the class turned out in front of his home. There's no verb in that sentence. But pretend there was a verb. And the verb was some verb that makes the sentence make sense. how we react. And here are some reactions. Just here we are. It's like an old-fashioned slideshow. It's going to show the beat. Slide. So Tanya Marsh says, it is interesting that the letters demand protection for children from online pornography, and yet in all three cited cases, the children took affirmative steps to find and access the pornography. Same impulse in human nature that drove young boys to hide under their blankets with girly magazines in the 1950s. This is where, if this were in a law review article, you'd have to find the citation for that. The question is, what body of scholarship could you cite to support that proposition, which we all assume to be true, is driving kids today? The new element to this mix is the internet, which makes pornography more widely available and readily accessible than before. In addition, we have a generation gap in which children understand how to use computers better than their parents. What is the solution to this dilemma? Now, this is a wonderful legislator's answer because it doesn't say what the legislator would do. It just throws a question back to the constituent. Tanya, are you here? Where's Tanya? Tanya, well done. So before I ask you to weigh in, let me just say we have the cold call engine up, and I apologize for the sort of uncivil nature of the fun. So we have it. Michael Siegel. Siegel, how about that? you know what? You deserve a pass, don't you? Should we give you a skip chit, or are you so into talking now that you're actually happy to? Truly in the spirit of the season. Bruce Richmond. Where is Bruce Richmond and who is John Galt? Two questions which do not have answers. All right. Joker, Jay Brody. Jay Brody. So actually the question for you is jumping back to the highlighted part of Tanya's answer, which was, look, these kids took affirmative steps to find and access the pornography. Does that matter?
Well, I don't know if that helps.
Do we need these mics? I don't know if it helps or not.
Well, I don't know how else the child would end up with the pornography, I guess, except the sexual predator maybe sent it to them. I don't think it really makes a difference in terms of the question.
Well, I mean, one way a child could end up with the pornography is to type in, I don't know, to hear something from Bill Clinton, type in www.whitehouse.com, right? We know that that does not go to the White House. It goes to a porn site. Actually, the guy who runs the site goes to ICANN meetings. We just saw him recently in L.A. He actually came with a bunch of props, White House eggs, White House milk, to show that White House wasn't trademarked by anybody, apparently. But he was cut off in the middle of his explication of the things in the White House box, so we'll never know for sure. So how about that, man? Whitehouse.com, that's an example of, yeah, the kid took an affirmative step to access the pornography. The kid turned on the computer and asked for the White House, but the kid certainly wasn't looking for it.
Right. I guess that's a good point. I would still say that kids are kids, and you still need to, I think whatever line you draw, it has to be on the other side of both when they look for it and when they end up with it accidentally.
So push versus pull doesn't particularly matter to you, is what you're saying.
Not for kids, no.
All right, let's hear from someone else. Sarah Guerrero. There you are. Push versus pull. Convenient, isn't it?
With my response?
Yeah, push versus pull.
Well, I happen to agree with Jay's response. So, in the interest of saying something different.
Don't put yourself out.
No, I guess I would agree. The whole point is that kids are lured in by this type of information, pornography, and how to build bonds and do all of the things that they're told they can't do. So that's why it's even more necessary to provide some filters or restraints, because they are enticed by all of that material.
Okay, so this is towards an attractive nuisance theory. It says the kids may go onto the internet looking for Encyclopedia Britannica, but the gravitational force of WhiteHouse.com is going to get them sooner or later. or bomb-making materials, or Satanism, or, you know, trench coat mafia, and they're going to be exposed to this stuff in a way that they wouldn't if they didn't have the internet. So before we just leave the push versus pull issue, let me give Tanya a chance to attend it. You cleverly placed obstruction in my way, but it will not be.
Okay, I think it makes all the difference in the world that in the free case we granted whitehouse.com, which is but the free case that were presented in question, kids had to go out and find the website or find the text news, print it out and bring it to school. And just because the medium that they found these messages was the internet, I don't think it means that you should treat it any differently than any other person in the world.
Have you said anything about the First Amendment? Yeah.
Well, the question asks what you want to do with national legislation.
Right.
And I did have an answer in the rest of my
That's true. I cleverly omitted your answer.
Yeah.
So what's your solution?
Well, my solution is not to pass national legislation and not to get the First Amendment involved in it. My solution is that if you have people, kids looking at computers in the school library or in class, you need to have a teacher standing behind them checking out what they're doing, because kids are always going to take the opportunity, you know, whether it's an electronic medium or printed or whatever, to do something they're not supposed to do. And I don't think the answer is to regulate the internet so that children can't get that content. The solution is to pay more attention to your children and more attention to what's going on in the school.
Well, let's be clear, because it's not just the teacher. In the instances we had people doing it at home and then just bringing it into school, and it circulates during recess or something. And it'd be strange for the teachers to follow the kids around during recess.
Oh, it's
weird.
So
is that the answer you would give to those concerned people writing in? I mean, yeah, let's look at it just from a political analysis now. Concerned parents comes in and says, my God, my kid is either exposed to other kids whose parents aren't as good as I am and getting this stuff that way, or even when I'm not looking, even Justice Scalia admitted during oral argument in the ACLU of the arena that you can't watch his daughter all the time. They apparently try. You're just telling the parents, like, tough luck, you know?
It's a very difficult issue from a political point of view, and I'm not going to ask, but it's a very difficult issue because you have to tell parents something they don't want to hear. And you're telling people, that's what I was telling them,
yeah.
They don't want to hear why I'm probably going to work wrong.
Or only from Massachusetts. And what's the background that you hinted at?
I was
How about that?
He would never, ever support what I did.
So it would be interesting to have you write the speech. It would be his response. Okay, let us hear, we're going to try just doing the cold call thing for a while, just to see what happens. So before we go to Bruce Richmond, wasn't Bruce Richmond just talking? All right, we'll jump over to, back to the PowerPoint show. Okay, Paul Kingsley says, as a politician, it seems it would be my duty to respond to my constituency's concerns. I am only the foot soldier. Obviously, parents need to be able to control the content that their children have access to on the net. But it's impossible for the person regulating their home to be supervising at all times, so it seems necessary to have some sort of rating system or software that can do this. Take that, Ms. Marsh, he says. As a concerned legislator, I would suggest that the government allocate funding to these efforts. I would specify that this allocation of money is only to go to efforts to develop software that is locally based on a person's PC, so as not to regulate the content anyone else receives. Paul, are you here today? There you are. Okay, so that's Paul's idea. Let's jump back to the other mechanism. Let's give Bruce a break. Michael Richardson. You do have to identify yourself if you're here. Okay, next. Janine Andres. Here, Janine Andres. Find yourself a microphone. And the question, there's at least two questions raised by that point. One is, from a constitutional standpoint, do you see any problem with a legislative proposal that would subsidize the creation of these filters? And it's okay to say you haven't taken con law, in which case I will not expect as much.
I've taken con law, but I don't really know.
Who taught you con law?
I'm in con law right now.
I see.
I think that I think there's something problematic with using government funds to subsidize the development of this software, if just in general, because you need some sort of initiative to show that people want their tax dollars to go to that sort of programming. But I, on the other hand, agree that if you're going to have site blocking programs, it should be local and only on the users.
So is that a constitutional problem?
I really don't know. I think that's probably, you know, using funds to do budget spending, but I think that's probably using funds for in a way that the government's probably not supposed to, but I really couldn't tell you.
There's a controversy right now in which a certain state government, which has long raised money, as many states have, by having prisoners hammer out license plates with special icons on them, like I'm a veteran, or I'm a doctor, or I like dolphins. Just approved one that says choose life, and there is a happy baby on the back of the plate. And a number of people are incensed at that and say this is the state supporting the message. As a constitutional matter, I'm not sure there's a whole lot that says the state can't do this, but you know, certainly come election time, there may well be something that can be done. I suppose the other question is just the general efficacy of this as a policy approach. Somehow subsidizing the creation of filtering software that Paul, right? Paul suggests. What do you think about that?
I think on the one hand, if the government can subsidize things that it thinks are socially beneficial, like funding for science research, for diseases and cancer, and sorts of things, then society could somehow say it's the problem, you know, that we need to fund and subsidize and that way solve. I don't think that it's a problem like that. I wouldn't even put that sort of software on my computer if I had children, because personally, I don't, if they want to look at pornography on the website, you know, I figure I'd talk to my kids enough that if that's what they're really, really into, it really won't kill them. But I mean, I guess if the world is conservative enough to really feel like computers should be blocked in that way, then the government can subsidize that sort of thing, certainly.
Well, recognize that Paul conveniently prefaced what he said with the, as a legislator, my constituents aren't my kids, they're just the people, so who knows what Paul really thinks. He's just saying, I got six letters, and presumably a poll behind it, that's the way I'm going to go. But you're saying, if he were seeking a co-sponsor for that proposal, you would probably tell him to seek another colleague.
Well, if I was a legislator, I might not tell him that, but if, you know, as a common...
Just on the general principle, the legislators lie. Would say, I'd be happy to sign your proposal.
I wouldn't be reelected,
yeah. Oh, interesting. So you actually may... Whether you see your duty as listening to constituents or your self-interest in that, you might well see yourself, if the poll numbers were correct, supporting this proposal.
I just think that a lot of the constituents that vote feel very strongly about things that are posted on the internet and access that children have to different sorts of information, even in school curriculum. So I think that I would have to represent the constituencies, and they would think something different than I do.
Gotcha. Before we go too much farther with this, it might be useful to see, to a poll of ourselves, how many people feel they have a grasp of just how PIX works. PIX is the most prominent of the filtering schemes that have been bandied about. How many people feel they've got a handle on how PIX works? And I ask this in a way that I promise is not a follow-up question if you affirmatively answer it, if you know. All right, I won't even ask how many don't. That's not everybody. Alex, would it be useful for you just to explain PIX?
Just quick, yes, sort of. Allows you to affect information in that document being signed.
This is in profound.
Here.
Just talk into it.
Okay. So,
this is the tech guy.
I like to draw pictures. Here are two things. One thing is your browser. The other thing is a web page. Right now, your browser just grabs a web page. The web page comes to your browser. before the web page gets to your browser, the only thing your web your browser actually knows usually is the name of the web page. There are a few other things that might be included in the header information, like when the last time it was changed, what type of content it is, if it's a graphic or not, that sort of thing. What Pix does is essentially just add a little tag to the web page. So the tag might say, this is violent material. The tag might say, this file is X bytes long. The tag might say, this file was prepared by such and such author. The tag might say really anything. Pix is completely agnostic in terms of what the tags say and how they say it. All Pix defines is a way of specifying these tags and a way of being able to then design browsers that can read the tags and make decisions based on the tags. Now, in the simplest scenario, the browser will request, and here I'm going to draw a web server. The browser requests the document from the web server. The web server goes, grabs the document, brings the document back to the browser. It's the simplest case. With Pix, the simplest case with Pix would be that all the browser does is it adds the tag to it. So the first thing all the server does is adds the tag to it. The first thing it does is it goes, grabs the tag, brings the tag back, and sends it to the browser. The browser can then read the tag and, on the basis of the material contained therein, decide whether it still wants the web page. So if the browser, let's say, doesn't like a certain level of violence, let's say an R rating, and the tag says that this page has an R rating, the browser won't further request the actual document. Now, a little bit more complicated than that would be this. This browser, when it asks for the tag, doesn't necessarily need to ask for the tag from this particular server. Let's say this server is cyber.law.harvard.edu, our server, and this page resides on cyber.law.harvard.edu. But the browser might have one another place, let's say the Christian Coalition, that has its own server. So the browser, when asking for this document, first asks for the tag, and it could ask for the tag either from the cyber server or from the Christian Coalition server. So it asks the Christian Coalition server for the tag. The Christian Coalition says, well, I don't really care what cyber server says, but we at the Christian Coalition believe that this particular page is extremely violent. Sends that back to the browser. The browser can then make the decision. This all happens without the user necessarily knowing. Can then make the decision, well, it's too violent, so I'm not going to even ask cyber server for the document in question. Are there any questions on that?
I don't have to wait to make cold calls and ask questions.
Yeah, these are questions of the kind, you didn't explain something well enough. That's your thing? Yeah. According to Pix, none of this is really defined how the user would do that. But in, say, Internet Explorer, it would just be one of those wizards. So you could fall down a wizard, and you could imagine even Internet Explorer selling spaces on that wizard to different rating organizations. And Pix actually, they think that there will be a market in these rating organizations, that the ACLU and the Christian Coalition and every other rating organization under the sun will compete to make those ratings. Yeah. A really good question. Let's go through this exact same little diagram, and this time let's imagine that no tag exists. So a browser might, first of all, ask the Christian Coalition for the tag. Christian Coalition says there isn't one. Ask Cyber for the tag. Cyber says there isn't one. Now the question is, when the browser gets nothing back, what does it do? And it can do one of three things, I guess. It could say, well, there's no tag, you still want to go grab the document. It could act as if the document had failed whatever tag, whatever thing your filtering criteria you were using. It could act as if it was a really violent one, or it could act as if it passed. And that would be up to the browser manufacturers, or there could even be a layer of software between the browser and here.
The vernacular that's grown up around this is that of, say, the kitty corral. The idea of the kitty corral is no news is bad news. Only those sites that are affirmatively labeled by whatever organization you trust and whose label passes your test get seen by the kid. Sites with no label don't get shown at all. The other way is, if it's not labeled, we'll let you see it, but the minute it is, and it flunks, then it flunks.
Yeah.
It depends, of course, then, how many of the sites that are uncomfortable for the kinds of people who think that labeling can be helpful are sites that are really out on the fringe and that come up in an instant, go down in an instant, versus how many are sites that are sort of persistently there and that eventually you would label and would stay there. The other variable, of course, is how much self-rating is going to take place. If you talk to the people who made picks, the people who made picks are pinning their hopes on self-rating by the websites, saying that most pornography sites, for example, just like, you know, many liquor store owners purport not to be interested in selling to people under 21. They just don't want to do it. That's not what they're in the business of doing. Just give them the tools by which to know one from the other, and they will make the choice. Similarly, this is saying we're giving them the tools to self-rate, and in fact, boy, if they rate themselves a double X, that's going to attract a whole bunch of people to them that are looking for it and that don't have the filtering set up in a way that will far outweigh the lost business for the people that do have the filtering set up.
And you could even imagine a search engine that what it did was it went around and read all the tags on documents, and it categorized tags that were double X as something you could then search for. So if you want to find those sites. One other note on the kitty corral, while we're talking about labeling, the label kitty corral seems to imply this would be only for kids, that only kids would have the ones where the unlabeled just doesn't show up, that it's as if it failed. But the first version of Microsoft Internet Explorer that implemented a PICS rating scheme actually used the kitty corral metaphor and didn't show pages that were not rated.
Also realize that if you're thinking as a legislator, this could be exactly where you might think government intervention might work. A requirement of self-rating, and maybe not even a penalty if you self-rate wrong. So it's not like you have to rate it, and then we're going to make sure that, you know, if we disagree with you, you lose. But just something that says you've got to label your ingredients. That would probably fall to a forced speech suit under the First Amendment in the United States, at least. It would fall prey to that lawsuit. It's not clear whether it would win or not. Certainly, if somebody asks if you label food, that's compelled speech, and it has been fought on exactly that basis and lost because the public interest is thought to outweigh it, content neutral, blah, blah, blah.
Can I ask, does anyone have any other technical questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. There are two questions in that. First of all, is the tag part of the document? There are different ways. Here we're talking about the self tag first, and then I'll get to the Christian Coalition tag. There are different ways to implement it, so the short answer is yes and no. It could be, doesn't have to be, doesn't really matter for our purposes. In terms of the Christian Coalition, that's something that could really matter for our purposes. The Christian Coalition's tag actually does not get embedded on the document. This is actually a lot like the third voice thing. When you have software that looks for third voice postings, it actually goes to the third voice computer to get those postings. Same sort of thing here. When you have software that's looking for the Christian Coalition's tag, it comes here. Any other technical questions? Yeah, Matt.
If you work for the U.S. government, every time you create a speech, you request that you have to do it, and then
that's what it's a similar thing, and there were content rating schemes that came out of meta tags, and in fact, you can implement PICS within a meta tag. What he's talking about is, in HTML, there's a way of specifying at the top of the document things like who the author is. And PICS can be implemented as just the same sort of thing, as just one more meta tag in the document. Any other technical? Yeah.
Okay, that's right. So, the last one is how it gets to you. So, in other words, if you're in a news site, you still want the violence or
the Yes, there's a way to tag on multiple levels. So you could have a tag that referred to your whole site that said, in general, we're PG, and then you could also flag certain stories that are X. And then depending on how the browser was, or the browser or even the server was configured, you could serve different things. So if you don't find a tag, you might serve the PG tag. But if you do find a tag, then you serve whatever tag is in that document. So yeah, you can go really specifically. You could even tag images within a document as being different, different ratings. Yeah. Yeah, that's another great distinction. So, let me first just describe the technical stuff behind what you were talking about. So, the question was, we all here, when we dial into Harvard, when we request a web page, actually we're requesting it through the Harvard network, and we'll get it sometimes through a Harvard proxy server. On the major commercial ones, this happens more, so that when you ask for, when you're the 100,000th person in Cambridge to ask for the front page of ESPN Sports Zone, it doesn't actually go to the ESPN server to get it, it just gets it from your local thing. This decision of which server to query for the tag can be made at any point along the traffic. So it might be that you as a browser connect through AOL, which then decides, hey, I'm going to use the Christian Coalition, and does it that way, so that you as the user don't have that much choice over it. But that's not necessarily the way it's designed, and you as a user could even supplement AOL's decision with one of your own decisions. Does that make any sense? I feel like I didn't make any sense.
Usually you don't get follow-up questions. You know, I'm
basically, to boil it down to something that has nothing to do with technology, it could be you making the decision, it could be your company making the decision, it could be your school making the decision, it could be your government making the decision, it could be anyone along the way making the decision.
And notice that what Paul was trying to avoid in his answer was Larry Lessig's nightmare, saying, oh, we're only going to subsidize it for applications at the local level, local meaning individuals doing it on behalf of their wards, not on behalf of AOL doing it for other people. Why would AOL want to do it anyway? But then another question is, how vertically portable is it? You know, if you fund bombs only for use by planes flying good missions, you know, there's some horizontal portability there, and certainly vertical portability problems that would make it a difficult constraint to maintain. Did people hear that? He said, for people, from his point of view, right here, you can say it again if you have a mic.
Yeah, I was just saying the nightmare scenario, as Larry Lessig put it, as I understood, was that you would be this innocent web browser, and some unseen propagandist would decide that you can't see pornography. And so in this diagram, you know, this technical diagram, he says the Christian Coalition to operate in that manner, so that we can frighten with that. I kind of think that's overstated.
Yeah.
I think that fear is overstated.
But realize that Larry is thinking globally, acting locally. And thinking globally says there may be other environments in which the primary ISPs aren't private companies that are the state,
right,
in states for which content control is not anything.
Yeah, you know that China doesn't have a First Amendment.
I take that to be his point.
Right. I mean, states implement their own values.
With tools invented by people that might be in other states.
Right.
See, Robert Oppenheimer question.
Yeah, so, you know,
we just built the bombs, we don't drop.
Yeah, well, I'm not as worried about those better here, I guess. So.
Clearly not.
I need a short technical question before I get to this.
Thank you. So I think, Paul, is there anything you want to add to your proposal before we move on?
That's a good point. I think that definitely using, giving people an option is something that I would definitely look for as a parent. I want to have the choice to, you know, regulate what my kids do, because I don't think I'm going to be able to check over what they're doing all the time.
So let me make another kind of argument, these kinds of filtering proposals. Do we have a web browser handy? While we pull up a web browser, I'm going to ask for www.peacefire.org. A guy named Bennett Hazelton, who I think just turned 19, founded a group called Peacefire, which was kids against filtering. And it made him very famous. He spent most of the past year traveling and going to conferences instead of being in school. Yep, there he is. There's Peacefire. If you don't have blocking software installed, let's just click for secret information about blocking software. Guys, but first, there's how to disable your blocking software. I noticed that the link has already been followed. And so, all right, let's just look at Cyber Patrol. So, to disable Cyber Patrol for the Mac, click here. Recommended method, download a program called CPC Crack here. If you run this program, it will display the Cyber Patrol headquarters password on your screen. We're working on a version that will also work with a new version. Once you've obtained the password, log in to Cyber Patrol, enter your password for the HQ password, and then pick Deputy Bypass, and et cetera, et cetera. Then there are alternate methods. Let's scroll down the screen. There's some files to delete. There's method 2, some files to copy. Oh, you get into Windows Registry and start tinkering with that. Method 3. Click here for method 3. All right, so there's, you know, this kind of community based around how to crack the software. Now, of course, as you might guess, peacefire.org is one of the most widely filtered sites out there. And that's worth dwelling on for a moment, because Peacefire is not a site with bomb-making materials. It's not a site with pornography. It's not a site with anything objectionable in the first order. It's simply a site that tells you how to undo that which the blocking software blocks. And the logical extension is, if you are going to try to filter out certain kinds of speech, you've got to end up filtering speech that tells you how to beat the filter. Some of these instructions, by the way, are put into graphics, like little banner ads, because some of the filtering software, one kind, the PIX that we just walked through, goes on this idea of rating. The other kind, of course, goes on the basis of actually scanning the words. And when they see words that just, you put the letters together and it amounts to something you shouldn't say in a law school class, it will either not display the page, or it will simply redact the words. So it'll look like a national security document with the terrible words redacted, and you're left to your own imagination. I think, you know, actually this might be better to do a search and replace, just to substitute Dolly G in those areas. And the kid may never even notice. But anyway, so that it doesn't actually put into its banned words list the words that when put together actually tell you how to disable it, they have put it into a graphic. Of course, you can't easily scan graphics for such words. Although it is said that you can scan graphics using automated means to look for pornography, because flesh tones have a certain range of colors, and there are certain patterns that emerge. And as a result, at one point at least, the British Customs Service was known to actually perform that search on a hard drive to see if there were any files that would then entail a further examination. Okay, so let's jump back to next slide. Amari Sickman. Why are you here? Oh, I saw you. Ah, okay, hello. Sorry about that. I would firmly support two possible legislative initiatives. One, mandate the use of filtering software in public schools that has been approved by the U.S. Department of Education to only block pornographic sites and news groups, drawing the line on pornography. Two, as a secondary measure that would provide a more long-term solution, have my staff investigate the possibility of creating a .xxx GTLD would be mandatory for all pornographic sites and news groups.
extra points for integrating other parts of the curriculum into the answer is .xxxgtlb. Alright, so, mandate use of Quilty software for porn and the xxxtlb. Let us call up the caller. Sharifa Brown. Sharifa, are you here? Sharifa. On the Department of Education approved idea, what think you?
Fairly similar, so I guess I agree with that. I think there was a kid, I don't remember the name of it, that we looked at in class, which talked about the problem with the First Amendment and applying it in the context of a library scenario, that you'd be prohibiting adults from having access to that information. So I think that there's a stronger case to be made than in terms of schools, that there might perhaps be a right for the government to provide filters. So, I mean, I support it. I agree with it.
And does it make sense to constrain it just to pornography?
Not necessarily. Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I disagree with Janine. Like, I think if kids want to get access to something, they're going to find a way to do so anyway. So it doesn't matter whether or not they're going to get it on the internet or if they're going to get it, from their big brother or their uncle or something.
What's your answer to that question?
My answer to that question is basically, I guess there would be a broader consensus in society that pornography is a bad thing, but when you start to filter out other types of issues, and the consensus breaks down. So maybe violent crimes or hate crimes are in pornography, but beyond that, then people, have problems with, prohibiting websites that are geared toward gays and lesbians and things like that. So
your answer to the question of if you block it here, they're just going to get it somewhere else is, well, if there's enough consensus to block it here, we'll block it here anyway, despite knowing that they're just going to get it somewhere else.
Well, I think it just turns upon being a legislature and sort of a legislator and doing what you need to do to stay in office. Like, I think that, if there's enough people out there who find it problematic that kids can have access to pornography on the internet in public schools to support that type of mandate. On the other hand, when you get into broader categories, the consensus breaks down. On a personal note, I don't agree with any of it, but, that's just me, so. Well, me and Janine and maybe half of the rest of the class, but,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was the second half of GTLD, .xxx? This idea would be, notice the filtering idea. If you don't have the filter installed on your computer, you don't notice a thing. At least as long as nobody upstream from you, like your ISP, has the filter installed. The filters are sort of, if you were trying to use a big word, you would say they are epiphenomenal to the websites that are being served. The .xxxgtld says, hey, why don't we actually, for everyone, shift this stuff all into .xxx, and then once it's there, you don't need very complicated filtering mechanisms, just to say, to the Harvard computers, for example, don't let people go to .xxx. Requests for .xxx should not go up to the root server to find out where the .xxx host is. Instead, we just throw them away or send them to the administrative dean's office.
Something about that just doesn't sit right with me. I haven't taken con law yet, actually, so I don't have it until next semester, but I seem to think that one can bring a claim of discrimination or a violation of First Amendment rights to freedom of speech by having to be forced to have their websites placed in a specific category.
Well, suppose we think of it, and again, I appreciate your disclaimer. Suppose we think of it, for those who have taken con law, as a news rack in store 24, for which there's actually a local ordinance that says magazines with the following content shall be placed in the upper portion of the rack, and a placard is put over them so that you can't see the cover, and children, it's supposed to be, greater than the height of Mickey Mouse so that the child can't grasp the magazine without any help. I mean, that's a kind of zoning that, just like the zoning here, perhaps, which in many instances can be constitutional, because the interest of protecting kids from harmful images can trump even a standard First Amendment claim. But again, you don't know that until you take con law. So, long path for reaction. Let's just, as an experiment, we're just going to keep going with the cold call, unless this is a technical clarifying question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you were, I don't know if anybody, if everybody heard that, the issue is raised, given that ICANN, private nonprofit, is ultimately to be controlling the root, and therefore the addition of new generic top-level domains, how are we going to allow a legislature to just simply mandate such a thing? Would ICANN be under its jurisdiction, and if so, could somebody complain? That's a very good question. I think ICANN, I don't know, Mike Roberts doesn't seem like the kind of guy that lies awake at night worrying about much of anything. But if he does, one thing he might worry about is what to do if the U.S. Congress simply says, here's a new top-level domain, ICANN, do it. The U.S. Congress may be specially positioned to do it, given that ICANN is an American corporation at the end of the day. It's not chartered under the U.N. or something. And you could see, so as to avoid making it some bill of attainder kind of thing, just saying, any root server company that operates in the United States shall include the .xxx domain in its list. And it would apply to ICANN. ICANN, under penalty prescribed by that law, might well have to do it. Of course, you then might see ICANN moving overseas, or, you know, you have an interesting political dynamic one way or the other. But certainly it's on the minds of Congress. When I was asked questions by people on the Commerce Committee, they were all interested to know about how readily a .xxx domain could be created and Congress's authority to make it. So, okay, let's see. Let's jump back to the proposal. Sorry, is there anything more you want to add about it? Or a question you'd want to ask about it?
I guess I want to say that one of the reasons why I thought about a filtering software only for pornographic sites is because I went very quickly before. I was really troubled by some of the readings where the comics that are out there, such as sites that are block sites that are politically oriented, sexual orientation oriented, perhaps even religiously oriented, and the fact that the library case, they were looking at the software local standards. Out there, and the local standards being used by the community to help bring my person to be involved with that and block people from being the type of sites that should be protected. Whereas I do think there is an expensive, and there has to be by law and by government, that pornography is a different type of speech, and therefore it's blocking, particularly out of school, particularly I didn't even mention libraries. Where you're only dealing with children, they are fine if they get it somewhere else. Personally, I would block it at my own house because I want my kids to stay but block it out of school so that parents can object to it. Not get it. So those are my substantiations for it.
Now, this is a... Go ahead. This is an interesting move because the people that made picks, if you talk to them, lovely guy named Paul Resnick, now from University of Michigan. Paul says, I came up with PICS because I wanted to get out of the, I wanted to separate the act of filtering from the actual content to be filtered. I just wanted to build the architecture that would allow filtering to happen so as to empower filterers against filterees, primarily parents against children. And then, you know, we'll just have filtering this way, filtering that way, and what the Ku Klux Klan wants to filter will be its business, and what the Anti-Defamation League wants to filter with the Christian Coalition, and we'll just have a bunch of filters, and then that much more choice. Now, this is what Larry Lessig says. This is horizontal portability. This is taking, I mean, if you look at, if your idea is you want to chill as little speech as possible, you take an act of Congress, like the Communications Decency Act, and it's just about porn, and you say, as the ACLU, wait a minute, there are less restrictive alternatives than this heavy-handed regulation. We can have PICS. Rah, rah, let's go for PICS. And Larry says, wait a minute, ACLU, what you're going to end up having happen is far more less speech in the world along all sorts of dimensions, not just the curious American preoccupation with pornography, if you allow the horizontally portable PICS to come about and then dare to call it a less restrictive alternative. Of course, the other dimension along which you might think it less restrictive is the degree of government involvement. If in the ACLU, when the state shuts you up, that's what gets them out of bed in the morning. If the shutting up is coming from someone else, I mean, you have the ACLU in the room with Paul Vixie explaining the real-time black hole list, I don't know what you get. I'm not sure the ACLU would be that upset, or even as upset as Paul appears to be with that. So you get the public-private distinction coming into play as well. Okay, are there any other slides we picked out here? Aaron Murdoch. Aaron, are you here? Aaron, lovely. I have received many letters from parents worried about what their children access from the family's computer. My answer to them is that they must take responsibility for that use. Oh, you're consistent. There are many cyber sensor programs available to help parents restrict access. That's before you saw Peacefire. I like Fix the Best because it terrifies Larry Lessig. Again, very consistent. And since the user is better able to customize what can be viewed than he or she is with other programs. All right, so there's your view. Has it changed in the past hour?
No, I can elaborate a little bit on what I like about this. And I mean, I did, you know, I supported the CDA, sort of this general idea, but I think it's, even if it passed constitutional muster, it would be very difficult to enforce and regulate and, publishers and distributors on that end. And I think that the best idea is to, I had a different paragraph for schools and libraries, but as far as private use, you know, parents saying, oh, my kid is, you know, looking at this stuff, I think that there's ample opportunity for self-regulation. And I think that if there is software, if there's a setup like Vix where people can actually choose what they want to, where parents can choose what their children can access, or where employers can choose, you know, I've heard of employers, you know, blocking certain sites as well.
Just like Birch Tree systems.
Right. Those people are making a choice, which is also, you know, their choice. It's also protected by the person who admitted they, you know, parents are free to try and keep their children from certain things that they want. And I like it because there's really no government intervention in that private program. If it worked the way that you said it was, and people could just, you know, pick and choose the tag that they wanted to accept, that's the best way. I mean, that's the easiest way to regulate home use.
That's right. Can we get the engine up again? William Brasher, then.
Yeah.
Hi there. So a question coming from Aaron Note. Is we can think of at least two approaches to preventing kids from looking at sites that we don't want them to see as parents. Approach number one is Aaron's approach, which says we'll have filters. We'll just try to stop them from seeing the site at the point they seek it. And if they get around it, they get around it, then we'll try to just prevent them from getting around it. Another approach is the Birch Tree Systems approach. Birch Tree Systems says we'll just let you monitor stuff. In fact, we live in an internet-worked world. While you are at work, you can have your kid logged in and having swiped for a little kid's driver's license through the card or entered her password, you'll know, just like Instant Messenger, where she's logged in the world. I see she's at the library right now and what she's looking at. And you can either do a spot check instantly from your desk as a parent, or you could search a database later, or have a database displayed later of filtering of sites that are suspect that your kid dwelt upon. Which of those two approaches appeals to you? Or is there a third? A little green light.
Hey, check. Where was the internet when I was in third grade? I think, to comment on a slightly broader level before choosing between those two, I think in general there's this weird instinct that's happening right now where people want the government to sort of take over a lot of the parenting role that customarily used to be considered pretty much the province of parents, and then I guess teachers who, you know, have to have a certain amount of time to spend, you know, with the kids doing. I'm a know, my views have changed recently. I'm a father myself, and you know, my little boy is like, you know, the one thing he does when you put him down is he crawls over to this specific plant and eats it, and because that is the first time he was ever prevented from doing anything was eating this one plant. So
they have a little bracing now, so it's possible.
Yeah, but no matter where you put him down, he goes to that same plant, and it's like there's this little, you know, circuit in his mind that sort of says that's the one thing that my parents don't want me to do, and that's what he does. And it's like, you know, I think that's always going to be what kids have an instinct to do, and I think that to a certain extent there's always a struggle between parents and, you know,
you give them an inverted filter and say, kids, the one thing you can't say is Encyclopedia Britannica.
Give them a pick on list and just sort of say, okay, this is what you have to work with. I don't know. I think, though, that it is the parents. I mean, ultimately, I can't argue with someone who has the moral or religious or whatever conviction that says that porno is bad for you. You know, I can't tell people that, you know, maybe that's your sort of, you know, uptight attitude or whatever. I mean, parents, I think that to some extent you have to respect that certain parents don't want their kids to see certain things. I personally, I don't know if I'm going to be that worked up about it. I mean, I think
So what form will your respect take? Your legislator
I mean, you know, the kinds of things I would say would get me either kicked out of office or just not elected at all. But I think...
You legalize marijuana for kids.
Well,
I'm just trying to think what you're proposing here.
Making it illegal doesn't have that much of an effect on it, on the availability. I don't know. I think that this whole thing of trying to legislate, it seems ridiculous.
Okay, but give me between 1 and 2 here.
Okay, between the concept that you can follow your kids around wherever they go, you know, you can monitor their online activities wherever they go.
You can either have software try to block them,
okay,
or they're allowed to see it. It's just that they never quite know whether you're watching what they see.
Which one would I suggest be implemented in sort of a general way, or which one would I choose if I were being a parent? Well, I personally would probably prefer the one where you can monitor what they're doing, whereas I don't think that, you know, you can make a law that says that that's what parents have to use individually. I think that if a parent wants to create a blocking, you know, system for their own children, I mean, I can't tell them not to.
Do you have an instinct as to which scheme would be more effective?
Oh, I think that the one where you can watch what they're doing is a lot more effective. I mean, that makes it even harder to you know, look at porno in your spare time and in a sense. I mean, with your kid, you know. I mean
you're an employee.
Meaning that if you have a blocking program on there, the kids are going to find ways to get porno, and they can pretty much, you know, enjoy it without a sense that they're being monitored. Whereas, you know, if I'm a kid and my parents have a thing where they can just kind of check in on what I'm doing, and I don't know whether they are or are not, I would think that's more effective in the sense.
Harkening back to the world of cheap sensors, I don't know if you've seen, on the low-tech side of things, there are now bumper stickers that parents get for their own cars to say, how am I driving? Call this number to report bad driving, and when the kid borrows the car, the parent is on the other end of the phone getting the complaint. The other thing they can do is simply put on either a governor, something, I don't know, I rented a U-Haul once, and they've got a governor on the thing. So you're sitting there on I-95, and you know, these semis are going by wonk, and you know, boom, because you're going 55.2 miles per hour, and no matter how hard you push the pedal, it will not go any faster. And that is, in essence, picks for U-Hauls. And then, of course, there's the monitoring thing, which says, you know, you get on the turnpike, you get your ticket at the beginning, you give it in at the end, they calculate your average speed and mail you a ticket for having sped, which more effectively stops speeding. So anyway, I'm not meaning to be...
I think as long as it's like your dad keeping an eye on you instead of the government, I don't really have much of a problem with it. I mean, I can't tell parents not to do that. Some people think that porn will make you into a freak.
But your instinct is that the panopticon, the... I don't know who's watching me right now, but someone might be, is far more effective than actually simply trying to stop the accident.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. People are trying to jump in. All right, go ahead, baseball hat.
Thanks. This comment was slightly inspired by Mike Kester, but he takes no responsibility for what I'm about to say, I'm sure. But we're just kind of thinking that a generation of children that grow up with the environment where they are constantly being monitored or spied upon is a really scary thing. Seems like you could get a lot of little robots, like George Orwell's 1984. I think privacy is really part of someone's dignity and building a sense of identity about themselves and having a sense of their individual self that's separate from society. Now, right now, if a kid has porn magazines in his room, I guess there's a slight chance that he'll be discovered by, you know, his mom, you know, going and cleaning up his room. But the thing about internet monitoring is that you get to see every single thing that people have read. So, for instance, if a kid's looking at a newspaper or takes a newspaper into his room, you don't know what he's read. But if you can see where he's gone on the internet, you know exactly what he's seen. If he has a newspaper and his eyes have lingered a little bit longer on the Filene's lingerie sale ads, then nobody's the wiser, you know?
That was Mike Kester's contribution?
No, that's exactly why I said Mike's probably not responsible for what I'm about to say. But I think there's a big difference between the trail of information you leave online and the little scraps of physical evidence of whatever books or newspapers or magazines you've read as a kid that might be lying around the house or tucked away in the garage somewhere.
There's definitely a difference. Definitely, I agree. Some people see the difference as a feature, saying, wow, I can be at work and still be able to participate in the rearing of my child in a way it was formerly impossible. Because I just come home and say to the kid, hey, how was your day today? Oh, no. Well, did you read the paper? No. And that would be it. And instead I'd come and say, hey, I saw that you were at CNN today. How about those riots in Seattle? You know, let's talk. And you could see a way where the very intrusiveness you describe is the feature sought by the parents. And certainly, when we abstract away from the parent-child relationship, this kind of intrusiveness is gold. I mean, it's this thing, whether it's for the purposes of control or just for the purposes of gathering information so you can better target your junk mail, is what people are wanting.
It's kind of a sick way to build trust and communicate with your kids. You know, if you come home and say, well, I see you were at www.iwishmydadwouldstopspyingonme.com.
We need to have another one of those talks.
You know, I don't think that's the way to build a closer parenting relationship. I mean, just on its face, like, it's creepy, it's weird. It's going to turn a generation of kids into Orwellian robots, and I just say no.
Can somebody who has a hand up give a resounding answer? I want somebody who does not emphatically agree. Yes.
I didn't hear all of the answer, but is the question, should we prevent, should the government attempt to prevent people from developing that technology? No, I think it's sort of a law school idea to think of the government intervening and being the mover in all kinds of social change. Which, right. No, I don't think the government's the mechanism for it, because I just think that's not a place for government. But you just
get sad. Well, just say it's too bad. No, we now live in a society where everybody's watching everybody, particularly parents watching their kids, but there's no role for government in social engineering trying to make it better. It's just time for me to go where there's no internet.
Well, JC, there's something, you know, there's a place between government policymaking and...
I only know you as Anna.
What's that?
It's one of these problems with a big class. I only know you as N.
I'm Eric, by the way. I was student number 2 about 4 weeks back on one of the outlines. I'm Eric. You can call me Eric. But no, I think that you know, the internet for one shows the power of speech and move. Oh, there I go, Eric, aka student 2, from a few weeks back. Sorry, Shoshana, I know you're probably tired of typing.
Somehow we're now on the David Letterman show. I don't know how it happened.
No, I just think that there's a big space between being sad about something and the government mandating action about it. And people and politicians using the bully pulpit and other figures can persuade society or seek to persuade society that this is a creepy thing to do to kids. And I don't think that you need a government policy.
Now again, just since we're in wrapping up mode, relate this idea to the copyright trusted systems problem. Because the copyright trusted systems problem says, once upon a time, government was very involved. It created Title 17 of the U.S. Code, among the thicker of the U.S. Code's titles. And Title 17 has all sorts of rules about speech in it, when you can repeat the speech of another. That's the government creating property interests or legally protected interests in what people say and in their creative output for a social engineering reason, to make society more creative. Then we end up with trusted systems developed under private auspices that can lock up these works very tightly, such that a publisher no longer even needs to invoke copyrights protections or respect the privileges that are set off against those protections, like fair use. You can just lock it up as tightly as you want. Now that's an example then of policymaking power shifting from government to private sector, for which government, unless it acts to say, wait a minute, we don't want these trusted systems, or wait a minute, these trusted systems need to reflect Title 17 rights and privileges, it leaves governments on the sideline. And I guess from your libertarian perspective, you say the more it's on the sideline, the happier I am.
Well, no, I'm a big believer in copyright.
Of course, libertarians are, oddly, even though it's one of the biggest interventions of government in the market ever.
You know, copyright essentially comes from a tort idea. I'm a believer in the common law.
What's your authority for that?
What?
I was just wondering what your authority was for that?
Gary Fisher, Prof. Gary Fisher, last spring. But no, I don't. I think if you have trusted systems, right, you get a book, you can still grab another computer and start typing by eyesight. I mean, there are ways to copy things from trusted systems. It's just not very convenient. So
we know, for instance, from the anti-plagiarism context, the tools are now being built that are going against the rampant plagiarism now possible through the World Wide Web, because you can go to hotpapers.com and download good research reports for money, that simply go up, search all known works, and compare what is out there against them and see if it's a copy. So, yeah, maybe in the privacy of your own home you could retype it, but you dare to ship it to someone else. Again, in a slightly future world, it's one in which you run a great risk, because people may realize that it came from a previously copyrighted work.
Well, under fair use, if you're not, are you talking about violating some contractual license that you incur when you are the end user of a trusted system, or are you saying that what you're copying doesn't fall under fair use?
I've been thinking the latter, but the former is a good point, too.
Okay.
You actually have a good network there.
I would agree that you shouldn't be able to contract out of certain things with fair use. I think that's perhaps a modification of copyright law that might be needed coming up, seeing how things evolve. Okay. I'm not a total libertarian, I guess.
Congratulations. Amy, did you have a point? Can you get the microphone up to her?
I was just going to say, on this whole parent watching their child thing, if I'm an employer, that's just not going to be happening. I mean, I am not going to be letting any of my employees be watching what their kids are doing at home while they're supposed to be at work being productive. I mean, that's just something that's totally unacceptable as an employer. I mean, the only way...
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think law firms would put out a policy prohibiting their associates from checking in with their children?
Well, I think, okay, it depends on how you define checking in. I mean, they obviously don't prevent you from making a phone call that you can take off from school by 3:30 or whatever. But I think they're going to object to you installing anything on their computer.
Plus, the kid need not know that, right?
True. They're going to object to you installing anything on their computer that allows you to have simultaneous check-in with your kids at home.
Really?
Absolutely.
Even if part of the deal for the firm is they get you full-time instead of part-time, because you're now enabled to be more involved in the rearing of your child, so that you don't have to be part-time.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
Yeah,
I think law firms are a bad example because professionals in law firms have many more privileges than normal working people do in, you know, the 40-hour world. So you may have a lot more flexibility as a lawyer in a law firm than what they're going to allow you to do than you would if you,
so the argument is, the way in which people today often don't have the time to participate in the rearing of their children is because they don't have the time, not because they don't have the means. Of course, you can imagine even then a secondary market in which you call it kind of daycare, it's just day surveillance. People who are paid to watch your kids and maybe call you if something particularly bad comes up, or there'll be a printed report waiting for you when you get home. You could go in and instead of reading the paper, you could just read 5 minutes, like watching a plant grow, 5 minute cuts through the 3 hours that your kids are on the computer and just get random snapshots of what your kid was looking at. If that were available, I don't know, I'm not sure I would call the parents bad names for using them. Okay, do we have any other slides left? I think that might be the last slide. All right, so before, Cash, you have something quick? Oh, you're teaching someone. Tell people what's going on, right?
I have some of the guys from the names list who've been bombarding us all semester long, so we got them to join the class here.
So who is here with us?
Well, now it's just Daphne and Dave Crocker. But Dave brings up an interesting point that we've been missing something in this discussion, especially like we're comparing monitoring versus filtering, and that is the effectiveness of the technology in general and how easy it is to avoid these filtering devices and even to avoid the control mechanism.
Was Dave paying attention when we looked at the ceasefire or the mic drop?
He just went out.
He just disappeared?
Yeah. I think he's gone.
Sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to drive you off with that. It's a very good point, and indeed it's one that I hope we're looking at, which is you certainly want a solution that's going to be effective. Wearing your legislator hat, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, it doesn't help your cause if you pass a law you can't enforce. Then you end up with disrespect for the law, you end up looking like an idiot. There's all sorts of problems that come about structurally passing laws you can't hope to enforce. So certainly throwing software at a problem when the software can be easily routed around, if we assume it can, is one issue to consider. Again, though, think about the Trusted PC Alliance. The Trusted PC Alliance is busy building computers for which you can't just change a registry entry to crack into the restriction that the computers hew to. Then Bennett Hazelton's instructions are going to have to be, then you take the soldering gun and you apply it to pin 8. And after that, you take the chip that we mail you and put it in the place of the other one that's there. That would then make it actually much harder to get around the protection scheme we have as well. But certainly as it stands, it may well be the surveillance schemes, because you never know when you're being watched, are inherently more effective than a filtering scheme, at least in the hands of somebody determined to get around it. Annika.
I was shocked when I read that Congress defined material harmful to minors. Now, I don't know what the word lewd means, but puffed pubescent female breasts, shouldn't there be a filter against this kind of legislation? I mean, what is the legislature saying about female breasts when they write this? Isn't... What are we telling children? Breasts are harmful to them?
Now we've turned into Oprah!
No, we haven't, but, I mean... I don't know. This, I find this much more dangerous than any pornographic site.
But now, let's be clear. Let's look at this again, just from the structural context. Legislature passes a bill, and it tries to be discreet, right? CDA 1. You can't pass stuff that's indecent, and we know it when we see it, so that's the rule. Supreme Court says that's vague, unconstitutionally vague. You've got to say what you mean so that people are on proper notice as to what is allowed and what isn't. So what do you get? Put ridiculously specific legislation, and of course, as soon as you start putting things into more detail, the exceptions and counter-exceptions creep out, and you end up with that kind of legislation. But at least understand it's being passed in the context of legislators who previously said, we know it when we see it, and so should the people covered by the law, have been told in no uncertain terms by the judicial branch, in the area of speech, you can't leave it that fuzzy. You've got to be specific. So then, this is what you get. You get this kind of specificity.
Doesn't make it right, though.
Well, that's the policy question, certainly, underlying the bill and also the First Amendment question. Let's turn to Michael Arlene's comment. I support the Children's Internet Protection Act, a.k.a. the Franks Filtering Amendment, which mandates that schools and libraries use appropriate filtering technology in order to receive universal service assistance. While this act constitutes censorship, I don't believe it would be found unconstitutional. Because in a public school, unlike in a public library, the computers exist almost exclusively for use by minors. The burden put on the free speech of the occasional adult user is negligible. Michael, are you here? Okay, so that's Michael's point of view. Pull up the... Oh, come on. Leon Coe. Leon. Oh, you've already participated today. Let's keep going. John Armbruster. Where's John? John, what do you think about your fellow legislator's proposal? Can you go back to the proposal? Yes. The Franks Filtering Amendment. It's saying, at least as far as computers in schools go, we're not outright saying they have to have the software, but if they want money to wire computers up to the net, the catch is they've got to filter.
Actually, I think I'm supposed to respond to this in the rotisserie this weekend, so...
This very one?
I think so. It looks like the one I just got in my email before class. But generally, I agree with this. That was my response to the question list, and it was actually very similar. Not knowing what I think was like Section H1K or something like that, which was within the Franks Filtering Amendment, which had said it was going to withhold funding under H1K or whatever. I'm not sure what that was. I assumed it was some type of funding that was going to libraries and schools. Personally, I don't have a problem with that. The objection I could see was what was raised in the Loudoun decision, which, to be quite honest, I would have liked to have seen an appealing because I think that the court was wrong in that, initially with its First Amendment analysis. So I really don't have a real problem with libraries and schools having funding withheld if they don't install these type, you know, the filtering type software.
As far as those, is there anybody with a different view on? Becca, yeah. Just in case Dave Crocker came back and got the microphone.
I'm concerned about filtering in public arenas, basically because there's so much filtering in private arenas. The absence of spaces that are just regarded as public, where the Constitution is the thing that makes the determination about who can say what, seems to me to be really valuable. While I'm concerned about kids in schools, because they're mostly minors who are looking at computers, as a parent, I might want my kids to be able to go to a school where there wasn't filtering, and if all the private schools did it one way, I might like the public schools to be doing something that supported better with the Constitution. Maybe there would be a way to do this in software that did support better with the Constitution in the future. I just couldn't see it from the reading that we had.
The way the filters are currently configured just is way too crude to figure to
really block out what should be blocked, let in what should be let in.
Right, and I just think that the existence of a public space that has to be public and governed by the Constitution is pretty valuable. Seems like the burden in our regular lives from the stores is that people who are selling pornography have to make sure that somebody's old enough to see it. I don't really see the problem with having websites have to do the same thing and have some level of responsibility for that. I just don't quite see how it's going to be done. I think that's where the push and pull problem is.
Is that guy green? Oh, just said what you said. Okay. Yeah.
I think the basic problem is that you want adults to be able to access whatever they want, and you want to protect children from accessing lots of sites. And I thought maybe the solution, at least for a library, would be to have basically terminals that are by default restricted and that are filtered, and that upon showing an ID that you are of age, you can still take off the filter, or if you're a parent with a child and the parent wants to take off the filter, you could do that. But that might be a solution whereby basically adults could access what they want and get them to be.
Yeah. Back in the back. Yeah.
Actually, if I could respond a little bit. I'm going back to what I said, my problem with allowing court with the First Amendment analysis that they made. I don't think the public schools or the libraries are required to allow, like, to actually offer this, to offer access to the internet. So my fears is that if they're not allowed to put a filter in, some communities may actually choose not to have any internet access at all to prevent this type of access from occurring, any access that they consider to be immoral. Which would, I think, be a bigger travesty, because now you're not only cutting off sites that are controversial or questionable in nature, as well as sites that are harmful within that community standards, but also sites that would be actually very helpful to the students or to the library patrons. And I would be concerned that there's no requirement that these libraries and schools have internet access at all. So I just don't see, that would be my big fear, and why I would prefer filtering over a system that allows the schools to completely withdraw access.
Yeah, last comment
from the corner. I'll get the mic over to you. I want to respond to the point that was made over there about the need for a public space which is free from restrictions. I just don't think that a public school is the place for that. I think maybe a public library is, maybe that would be the idea behind the loudness decision. But if I were a parent, I think, you know, I would feel like, you know, the government basically forces me to send my children to school, and while they're at home, I can monitor them, but while they're at school, you know, I can't. So, you know, I would feel like I would want schools to implement some sort of filtering strategy.
Although it's interesting, because you might imagine a school board doing that. And then you actually get into a more sophisticated analysis, not just of should government do this, but is it the school board that should decide, or is it a federal filtering amendment that says the school board, look, if you want this stuff, you're going to have to take it with the filters, regardless of what you, representing the parents in your area, may think.
Yeah, I think that would be better than federal solution. I think the biggest problem, though, is the fact that certain political speech is excluded. But, you know, where I come down on that is just that it's one of the, you know, baby in the bathwater problems, where I think that, you know, sure, we'll lose a handful or maybe a significant number of good sites, but to me, you know, the value of excluding all the new sites is worth
it. This has been a terrific discussion so far. It's interesting to see the different dynamics when we're using the cold calling to get everybody into it. I thought it might be useful. We have a little over a half hour left. We've been talking about legislatures and legislators. In the ICANN context, we've been talking about governance mechanisms. So I thought it might be interesting to try an experiment of sorts. I'm going to call an exactly 5-minute recess. At the end of 5 minutes, we will reconvene as a legislature. I will be the Speaker of the House by self-nomination. And at that point, I will entertain motions for a new law. And I want somebody to introduce a law
that speaks to this one way or another. See if it gets seconded. If it does, we will entertain debate on the motion. You may be free as somebody to call for attention, and when you get it, introduce an amendment. At the point at which you introduce an amendment, it has to be seconded. If it is, there is debate on the amendment, and then the amendment may pass or fail, and ultimately we then vote on the original question. And we will see if we can come to resolution of some kind on this issue of kids and filtering. So that's what I'd like to try happen. Feel free, since I don't assume that everybody here is familiar with parliamentary procedure, that's not meant to be inhibiting. So you should feel free to raise your hand and actually bellow on a point of parliamentary inquiry or on a point of order, and you actually can then ask a question, say what you're trying to do, and I can help you frame how to do it as a legislator. The key is to get as few people abstaining as possible at the end because they have no idea what's going on as possible. So are these instructions relatively clear as to what is to happen? Yes? The only question is, shall we entertain the first resolution to be introduced as people raise their hands, ready to move them, and I call on someone, or shall we actually have the cold call machine identify somebody until somebody is ready to introduce a resolution, understanding you can pass if you have nothing to say? Is there any preference? All those in favor of the first alternative say aye. Those opposed say nay. That was a very weak vote. All those in favor of the second alternative say aye. All those opposed say nay. All right, so the nays have it. Sounds to me like the first alternative is what we would do. We will not use the cold call engine. Is there a question? Senya. Which one to actually take up as a proposal. And if that's the case, you'd vote to take it up even if you're against it because you think it's more oomphy than another one. All right, we will so try it. So we have exactly 5 minutes. Please don't use this as an opportunity to leave. I'll set my diver's time and we'll come back in 5 minutes for this exercise.
Hello, hello.
forum call. I hope you've been using the time to frame legislation rather than just chat. We start our session rather than with a prayer from the chaplain with a question from Colorado. And so you're teaching some people too at the laptop, is that right? So how many people?
During the session, we've had anywhere from 5 to 7 people come in and out. Our question for the legislature is about global legislation, globalization of the effects of our law. And the question is it possible to create legislation that does not provide a false market for what it's legislating against? An example would be legislation on the prohibition of marijuana that's provided to the black market. The idea that our colleague from the West, raised, which was what kind of values are we promoting with our societal legislation.
So why don't we bear that in mind as we take up a specific policy proposal? So which legislators have a proposal of some sort introduced to the floor? 1, 2, 3. 3 legislators. 1, not entirely certain. Let's start with you, Sarah. And if you can identify yourself and your hometown you represent.
So I guess my legislation has 3 points. Most of them are based on the government only stepping in to make sure that access is available and, for the most part, allowing the market to deal with the filtering. So one is that in libraries that do decide to filter, there's availability for adults to access the internet unfiltered. And the second is that for information sourcing, that the ISPs should provide information to its clients that filtering software is available. I'm gonna leave it at that.
So there are 2 points to your proposal. In libraries that filter, adults can opt out. Does this apply to both public and private libraries?
Public.
So public libraries must allow adults to opt out of any filtering scheme they should choose. Is that right?
Yes.
It also means if a library has, for instance, a paleontology exhibit, or learn about rocks, and it happens to have a display with a computer hooked up to a rocks internet site, adults go elsewhere. Is your intention, I just want to get some legislative history behind this, is your intention to bind the library to allow the usage of that terminal for any purpose, or in that instance they may make it a rocks-only terminal?
They can make it a rocks-only terminal. They also can have children's terminals near the children's book section that are only for kids, or if there were a reasonable way to have an on-off switch for the filtering that kids would just override, but that adults could change the access.
So the point of your legislation is to ensure that adults can get to the whole internet no matter what filtering schemes a public library may choose to impose. And then you have a second thing that says ISPs must provide information that filtering is available. And that, by that you mean if I sign up for AOL, I get a welcome package from AOL, and it says, by the way, you should know that filtering schemes exist, and sends a helpful packet of sites I can visit, like Cyber Patrol. This is called the Cyber Patrol Subsidization Act.
I was talking to my colleague John here, and I agree with him that there are market inefficiencies. So I was saying that the market that I wanted to stay out as far as mandating whether there should be filters or not. I think that if there's a desire for it, that the market creates these filters and people can choose. I would want the government to step in if there were a monopoly on filtering, so that people did have access, complete access to the internet. But John was saying that that there's a lot of there's an information gap between generations, that parents think that their kids can't access certain sites, and there's a lot of confusion. So I also believe that there's a role for the government in providing information to people about filtering and what it does and doesn't do.
Okay, so Provision 2 then does not insist that an ISP admit it to a customer if the ISP is filtering. That's not the point of Proposition 2. I'm on AOL. I go to a site called AOLstinks.com, and I keep getting these 404 not available errors. And it turns out that deep in the innards of AOL headquarters, they are simply blocking the site. But this legislation would not compel them to tell me if they were doing it.
I like that idea, too.
I'm just a speaker. I'm neutral. I wasn't trying to suggest anything.
Actually, I thought about that. No, I think that would also be helpful. I would want to be warned that it was being filtered in that way.
Okay, if we can boldface proposal number 53 then, as self-commended with encouragement of the speaker, I'm not offended. Let's just have that there. We'll consider that on the table. Now, it turns out there's actually an international dispute over what on the table means. In American parliamentary circles, to table something is to forget about it for a while. Elsewhere, it can mean it's on the table, it's front and center, we have to deal with it now. So I just won't talk about tables. We're just not going to deal with that right now. We're going to hear the other two proposals. Sir.
I'd like to introduce the Frank's filtering amendment, the Children's Internet Protection Act, but I'd like to introduce it in a modified form to take account of your suggestion before. I think as it stands, the legislation makes contingent the receipt of federal funds for internet connectivity with adopting filtering software. But in the interest of making it sort of more on the local level, I'd like to say that receiving federal funds is contingent on a school board considering whether to adopt filtering software. So in other words, all they have to do is have a vote on it or fill out some sort of form.
So do you have a text?
Do I have a text?
Something that the scribe can type, and that's the proposition on the table.
Yeah. In order to receive universal service assistance, school district, the school board of a school district needs to file a form saying that they have considered the issue of whether to adopt filtering software.
Bold action. In order to get the assistance, a form must be filed, perhaps in triplicate, notarized duly by the appropriate representatives to say, and I quote, we have considered the adoption of filtering software. Are they required to appoint a committee, or is it just that they've considered it?
The school board is a committee, I guess.
It's just that they've considered it.
Right.
Very
so
good.
The point behind it, I guess, is basically that it forces school boards to be aware of this issue and of the possibility of using filtering software. Conceivably, there are school boards that never even thought that it was an issue or don't know of the existence of filtering software.
So this is a form of agenda setting without trying to dictate the outcome of the agenda.
That's right.
Okay, so that's the second proposal. We have a third proposal. Oops, another one came up in the midst of things. Third one, Ksenia, if you can identify yourself and your hometown. To be certain.
And I
would like to present this proposal together with a representative from New York or...
Oh, I love it. It's long rolling. It's great. Go ahead.
And we would like to propose that we create legislation requiring the whatever organization is in charge of a new level domain, like ICANN it is right now, to create a new .xxx general top level domain. And the second part of this would be to require all the porn sites to new and existing to move to .xxx location. And
does your bill say how to identify a porn site?
Yes, it would refer back to the provisions in the U.S. Code existing right now. That
which part of the U.S. Code talks about porn sites?
The part of the U.S. Code that defines the porn is, I guess, 231E2B. 47 U.S. Code, section 231, and the other case law that's so far been dealing with for not repeating and defining what it is.
So forgive the speaker's addled mind. 47 U.S.C. 21 something B says what exactly? Of course, normally it's a long since it's been passed. I don't know if you saw the Boston.com site recently featured a real video of the Massachusetts legislature in action, where they actually capture moments before the final omnibus budget is passed. Somebody sneaks up to the speaker, whispers into the speaker's ear, speaker puts his arm around the guy, says, don't worry, and then says, there's been an amendment introduced, it is agreed. And a certain subsidy was inserted for taking certain rent-controlled apartments that have been public housing off the market and giving a subsidy to the brother of the legislator in question. It's all on real video. It's quite extraordinary. So anyway, I'm sorry, one of my reminiscences. So there's going to be a .xxx GTLD, require all existing porn as defined in 47 U.S.C. 231. What's 47 U.S.C. 231 again?
I suppose that's the section which defines material that's harmful to minors.
Ah, material that's harmful to minors. You just lost your co-sponsor.
We didn't discuss that particular issue. We did talk about, though, differences between schools, libraries, and private computers.
Sounds to me like you should have a quick conference with your sister across the aisle while we hear from Representative Holt. Can I get a microphone?
My law would require school districts to treat the internet exactly like they treat their school library, and teachers and whatever the processes whereby they choose their books for the school library would be replicated on the internet, and the sites would be added just as books are added to the library. And according to Supreme Court case law, that would mean that they could not be deselected once they have been.
You're referring to the famous PICO case. And you're saying that with your proposal, we have a kiddie corral of sorts comprising books that are sites or pages pre-selected by a librarian at the school who adds them in, and those are the only things the kid can see.
Well, not quite. It's not a librarian that's doing the decision-making necessarily. It's a librarian who has the decision-making power in the school district for choosing libraries. And so,
you think chooses the school district library?
I mean, I'm assuming that if there's a controversial issue, that it somehow...
The librarian can get overruled.
Well, that there's some democratic process. Started. Yeah.
Gotcha. Sounds like.
Can I add an amendment to that, which is that it's HULSE.
HULSE. Yeah. And from the .xxx contingent, we have
what we've decided is that the definition of what would have to go on .xxx. There's no provision in our materials for the reading for this week that says what the obscenity statute is, but there is a statute in the U.S. Code that describes obscenity, not material harm for the children. I mean, that's the conservative side.
Yes, if you're thinking obscenity, may I refer you to Title 18 of the United States Code? I believe, but I wouldn't turn on a 2218 is what you want.
It's
but I'm only the speaker. So you need obscene material. Now, it's very interesting, and maybe we should save this for the debate, but obscene material is material that is not protected by the First Amendment. It's material that under particular community standards, and this is a standard not coming from the law, but coming from Miller v. California, right, Supreme Court, which is saying that it has absolutely no redeeming social, medicinal, scientific, cultural, artistic value, and might well be offensive. Boom, that's obscene. Very few things in our regular discourse are taken to be obscene.
I don't know if we know exactly how to define it. What we're thinking of is something that would consider, would say, block, you know, alt-sex, you know, whatever that is, or something that would also block Playboy, but not something that would block any political speech whatsoever. The whole point of our proposal is that if any filtering program is put in any public forum whatsoever, that filtering program only to block pornographic materials and never to block political speech.
And the way you do it is by creating .xxx and then saying what sort of stuff has to go in there.
Right.
And what happens if the stuff is not in there?
If
someone should dare not to follow the advice of the law,
and
what's the penalty to pay?
Yes.
Should
there be liability for that, for the person to
the civil or criminal?
The same as providing material.
Now, interestingly, this is a liberalization of the obscenity laws, because it's saying no longer you go to jail if you say something obscene across the state line, and now it says so long as you say it in .xxx, you're fine. But okay, that's your proposal.
And we would require schools to block. You have relatives.
Okay, as is normal for a legislation, we are operating at the 11th hour, so we will have a short but meaningful debate after the clerk asks a clarifying question.
That's not quite what I had in mind. The one sides are added, they can't be removed, period. But they can be added through a democratic process or whatever, however the school district does it normally. The folks can monitor.
And if the sites change, can the site masquerade as happybunny.com and it's about rabbits? And then 10 minutes later, after it's added, it turns out to be about Playboy bunnies, and... It's a good question. Okay, so that legislator's going to think about that. It's a very hands-on speaker we have here. All right, so let's take up paragraph 56 first, the modified Franks filtering amendment. You guys need a lesson in how to title your legislation. It has to have the words freedom in it, improvement, or omnibus. But, all right, so the modified Franks filtering amendment. In order to receive universal assistance, school board must file a form in triplicate showing that they have considered adopting filtering software. Is there anybody who wants to second this motion? We have a second. Okay. Does anybody want to speak in favor of the motion? 30 seconds in favor of the motion, somebody other than the person introducing it. Is there anybody who wishes to speak against it? This is true lawmaking in action, right? Open, transparent. You want to speak against your own amendment? All right, you got your 30 seconds.
I think it's a federalist, because it forces localities to consider it, but it doesn't force anything down anyone's throat.
Okay, if anybody wants to speak against this motion? Yes, sir. That's correct, I assume. That's another form to file, and that's why you're against it. Yes. Does it have to do with public libraries, or are you just focusing on schools?
No, it has nothing to do with public libraries.
Okay. So let us call the question after a raucous debate. which many emotions were displayed. We will put it to a, this is a very strategic maneuver too. You can ask unanimous consent, seeing none so ordered, or you can put it to a voice vote or actually a roll call. We won't dare a roll call here. So let's put it to a voice vote. All those in favor of Rep from NY's proposal, please signify so much by... Oh, I'm sorry, I was just passing the wrong thing here. All those in favor of the modified Frank's filtering amendment signify so much by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
In the opinion of the chair, the nays have it. If you wish to challenge the chair, this is your opportunity and we can have a division. Roll call. We do so by a showing of hands now. All those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed, raise your hand. In the opinion of the chair, the nays have it and the motion fails. Okay. Next up is, there's one before that. Okay. The two-point market-based plan. In public libraries and filter, adults must be allowed to opt out, and ISPs must provide info to users if filtering is available. Does anybody want to speak for 30 seconds? If you're filtering, you must disclose. That's the third element of the two-point market-based plan. Anybody want to speak for 30 seconds in favor of this plan? Yes, sir. I think at the moment it's at the pleasure of the person who introduced it. It either goes or falls together. Do you wish to carve it back or you're going to take your chances? We've suddenly become let's make a deal. Okay, anybody else want to speak in favor of it? Yes, sir. Is there anybody who wishes to speak against this proposal? Yes. So the problem is that more people will go to libraries as a result of this thing. You're right, we've got to keep them empty. Are there other statements against? You realize I would be removed by now as speaker in any normal, rational assembly. Another one against, yes. Gotcha. All right, we're running solo on time. Let's just call the vote. All those in favor of the representative from Massachusetts' two-point market-based plan, please signify so much by saying aye. All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
That's very close. All those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed, raise your hand. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, but it's awfully close, and the motion is carried. Okay, on to the next one. This is number 63. My God, there are four of them.
Well, I'm formally rejecting mine for being poorly thought out, so... There's actually only three.
Uh-huh. All right, paragraph 65 has just died in committee. So, if we can just state it more clearly, what is the proper way it should read? So Representative Sickman has just asked for a sense of the chamber resolution having no binding force of effect of law, understanding that that is what it is, a sense of the chamber resolution. Let us just gather a sense of the chamber. All those in favor, please signify so much by saying aye. The sense of the chamber that we're going to have a .XXX GPLD, and we're going to require all existing porn. It'll be worked out somehow, moved to the GPLD. There'll be a committee appointed of the whole to discuss this. That's the proposition for which we're seeking a sense of the chamber. All those in favor, another question?
if the library issue is a problem, we thought about libraries having two different logins, one for adults and one for children.
Okay. All those in favor, signify so much by saying aye. Those opposed, say nay. In the opinion of the chair, the nays have it and the motion fails. I now call us adjourned, and thank you very much for a very interesting day in the class.
Okay. Bye.